Hello, and welcome back to the Bug in a Rug podcast. We just recorded an intro, and it did not save. My name is Caitlin.
I thought it was pretty good. I'm kind of disappointed, and my name is Whitney.
And our special, special guest is...
Jack.
Second time around, got in one.
Well, got it in two.
Got in two.
But we were much more enthusiastic about how excited we were to have a special guest.
Our special guest! Woo! Excited.
Yes.
Is your mom going to listen to this?
Probably.
Give a shout out to your mom. You want to say mom. Hi?
I'm famous now.
Hi, Jack's mom.
I was trying to remember what we said the first time, and I don't remember.
We were telling Jack that if he gets nervous, not to worry, because you can cut anything out of the podcast he doesn't like.
Yep.
And for every one or two cat sounds you hear during an episode, there's five or six more that we've cut out.
They're sleeping right now, though, so.
It's quiet. Too quiet.
It's too quiet. Just quiet enough to get into a spooky story. So, Whitney, will this story keep us up at night, or will we still be able to sleep as snug as a bug in a rug after we're done listening?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. See, the thing about this story is that it was sent in by a listener, and I will get into that in a second. But when I started doing this story, I was very excited, I was very into it, and it kept me up for a couple nights, and I kind of had to put it to the side and come back to it. So it was one of those that I lost a little sleep over. I don't really hope that for you, but I hope you find it as interesting as I did.
That's the whole point of the podcast, Winnie.
That it keeps people up at night. I thought it was that they still sleep as snug as a bug in a rug.
We don't tell bedtime stories.
Today we will.
I guess it depends on who you are.
I don't have any special poems to go with this.
Darn
as
it!
We have in the past. It's not going to be a musical episode.
Oh.
If you hear cards shuffling in the background or candy wrappers, Jack is making himself at home on our dining room table covered
not eating in candy. That's me.
Leftover Halloween
the jokes
things.
Of Laffy Taffy.
Hey, so shake boy. That Laffy Taffy.
Give us a good joke from a Laffy Taffy.
Nobody? Okay. Shake that Laffy Taffy. Oh,
we said
shake
it. You
that
just
Laffy
said it wasn't
Taffy.
A musical one. Okay, what's the joke?
It's not funny because it's on a strawberry wrapper, but it's about bananas.
What? You gotta tell us
it
now.
It should be on a banana.
I thought you were insulting the strawberry Laffy Taffy,
strawberry
which is
banana.
The best Laffy Taffy. Fight me, I don't care.
Why do bananas like gymnastics?
Because they can do splits.
Yeah.
Yes.
That joke was very appealing.
Since I got okay, all right. Since I got that right, I'm gonna eat this one.
I liked it very much.
Okay, let's move on. What's your story?
It's getting better. I lied. I like this intro more. Okay, so today's story was sent in by a listener. It was suggested by David.
Woo-woo.
Thank you, David. And we are doing this episode this week. One because I'm finally able to talk about it without losing sleep. And secondly, because David's birthday was this week. Yay! Happy
birthday to you.
This is not a musical episode. Happy birthday to you. You listen to our podcast.
You just smell like one, too. You didn't like that one? Okay.
This is an audio medium. Shrugging your shoulders was not acceptable.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. I don't know.
I liked it.
Thank you.
Anyway, so today's topic is a bit of a mystery.
Ooh.
I would call it a mystery. It's not really true crime.
Oh, no, that's Twilight Zone.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's the alien one that everyone does stuff to?
Who are you?
No, that's CSI.
Who?
It's like Unsolved Mysteries.
Like X-Files or something?
X-Files. What's the X-Files theme song?
Never watched it.
Jesus.
Why are you here? You don't know the X-Files theme song. Good point.
There.
Oh.
And then it's
How long are we going to play this for?
There we go. That's what I was getting to. That's it.
Okay. Jack, would you rather have the ability to play the recorder or a harmonica?
She asked us the other day.
I took the recorder and just, like, call it for college.
No.
I'm a black belt recorder player.
I'm sorry.
Stop the podcast. I forgot.
There's belts in recorder?
Yeah, I didn't have them in when I did it in 5th or 6th grade or whatever, but in college I did have a
black belt. A song, right? Yeah. You had to learn a song a week or something.
Yeah.
And if you could do it, you'd get a little belt tied around your recorder. First,
we were the only class to ever get full black belts.
Shout out. Wow. Kelsey did it too. That's how I knew about it.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. What type of martial arts is a recorder?
It'd probably hurt if you smack someone with it.
Do you also learn self-defense with a recorder, or are you just gonna play a song?
No, it's a different class. I did have to learn self-defense for, like, kids.
What?
Yeah, you can't wait, just, against like, kids?
Oh my god.
So if you're a teacher, you have to learn self-defense against children in case they swarm you?
You can't.
Is it a lot of, like, blocking?
Yeah. I mean, it's mostly how to, like, restrain them, like, legally.
Not deflect just, like, their energies back onto them, like an airbender.
The only thing I really ever had to do was dodge scissors.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Dodge, duck, and dodge.
Wait, someone threw scissors at you?
Yeah.
Did you block with the recorder?
No, I did not. Different class. The music teacher at that school was my retired elementary music teacher, and he made me sing in front of my students.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah.
What song?
I sang A Parting Blast. It was an Irish song.
Oh, I was like, I don't know.
Hey, have you seen the meme that's out right now that's like, my girlfriend's really shy, and the first time I took her home to Thanksgiving to meet my family, it was like 14 people, and at the end of dinner, I said, to thank you for the meal, she will now sing you a song. And she's like... It's like, now we're married or something, and I was just like, oh my gosh!
Okay. That's funny.
Caitlin always, I know when she thinks my jokes are really funny, if she just stares at me and either says, shut up, or that's not funny. It's a weird dynamic.
Maybe. Okay, anyway.
Anyway, thank you, David, for sending in this suggestion. He sent it in a long time ago. I think it was one of the first suggestions we got.
Yeah, we're still working on suggestion stories.
Yeah, if you have a suggestion on a story that you want to hear about, please send it to us.
Trust us, we're working on it.
We'll give you the info at the end of the podcast of where you can send it.
Yeah.
So, without any further ado, I'd like to present to you the mystery of Dilatov Pass, or... Jack, you told me how to say it before we started.
I don't.
No, you said it, and then he said...
Dyatlov.
Yeah, I was going to say, you said it, and then he's like, yeah, sounds
right. I've been sitting here saying this word a million different ways, and Jack said if it's a Russian last name, it's probably Dyatlov, because Jack's full of fun facts. Fun fact about Jack, Jack's full of fun facts. Okay, so our story takes place in...
Dyatlov Pass.
Well, it's named that now, but it wasn't before. So... There's about to be a cat on the table.
She's trying real hard.
So our story takes place in the Urals of the Soviet Union, and there's several Russian words that I cannot pronounce.
What do they start with?
S. Sverdlovsk Oblast. The Urals of the Soviet Union.
The Urals? Is that a place?
It is a mountain.
Oh, okay. Oh, area. And then you're just naming, like, the mountains.
Yes. Well, the Urals are the mountains like in this area of the Soviet Union.
Okay.
Siberia? Are we like...
Hopefully she
yeah, I can't like pronounce it. Siberia.
Oh, Sverdlovsk? Sverdlovsk? Oblast?
Sverdlovsk? Yeah, okay, there's Steen and Heidin. We're in Siberia.
Okay, so our story takes place in 1959 in the Soviet Union. In 1959, a man by the name of Igor Dyatlov, who was 23 years old at the time, was a radio engineering student at the Ural Polytechnical Institute, which is now called the Ural Federal University in the Soviet Union. He was a leader of a group that he put together of 9 other people, plus himself, which made 10, and their goal was to hike through the Urals.
What was his name?
Igor Dyatlov.
Igor Dyatlov.
So the pass is now called... years old. Correct. The pass is now called Dyatlov Pass. This is the trek that they made.
So he either did a really good job, and everybody got through, and they named it after him because he found the easiest way through the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what happened?
Mm-mm. So he put together... not a group with himself and 9 other hikers.
Yes.
They were mostly mostly fellow students and peers from the university. There were 8 men and 2 women altogether.
Okay.
Their experience level is kind of important as far as hiking goes. Okay. For the background of the story. Each member of the group was an experienced grade 2 hiker with ski tour experience, and they would be receiving their grade 3 certification upon their return. At the time, I know this made no sense to me, so looking it up, at the time, a grade 3 is the highest certification you can get as far as hiking in the ski tour experience level in the Soviet Union, and it requires candidates to traverse 300 kilometers or 190 miles.
Count the table, 100 points. Okay, so they had 50. 50 points, sorry.
Cooper has replaced Jack.
Cooper's replaced Jack. Jack's going to get a drink of water. Okay, so grade 3 is, like, the highest you can get.
Right. So
they had to have so many miles, but they're grade 2, so they're still working on that.
Correct. Okay. So kind of the point of this trip was because...
But Dyatlov, I'm assuming, was grade 3.
No. They were all grade 2, and the point of this trip was for them to all make this trek and become grade 3.
You would think they would have somebody.
I think that... you're supposed to do it on your own.
Oh, okay.
I don't really understand completely.
Okay.
But the goal of their expedition was to reach Otorten, Otorten Mountain, which was 6.2 miles north of the site that we're going to talk about that becomes Dyatlov Pass.
6.2 miles from there?
Yes.
So how long was their whole journey then?
Well, in order to become certified, it'd have to be 190 miles.
Oh, jeez.
But I think that they were trying to go there and back.
So they were... Oh, okay. I'm not trying. So it was like an out and back. Okay, okay.
And I think they were going up the mountain. But I'm not... But that's beside the point.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter, I guess.
Right. So this route in February, at the time they were going to make their trek, was estimated as a Category 3, which is the most difficult and would get them their certification.
Okay.
Okay. So a little bit about the hikers. They all have Russian names that I'm not going to be able to... pronounce well, and there's 10 of them. So we can post those names to our social media. Do you want me to try and pronounce them? Okay, we're gonna try and pronounce them. I can spell their last names as well. So we have Igor Dyatlov, who was a 23-year-old male, Yuri Doroshenko, who was a 21-year-old male, another Yuri, who also went by Gregory Krivonshenko, Krivonshenko, who is also 23. Alexander Kolotklov, Kolevatov, 24, male. Zenadia, Kolmogorova, who is a 22-year-old female. Miss Dubinin. A, who is a 20-year-old female.
Try it.
Dubininya?
Yeah.
Dubininya.
You did really good on the first ones.
I did. And then I just...
Then you gave up.
Gave up. Yeah. Miss Dubininya, who is a 20-year-old female. Mr. Slobodin, Slobodin, who is a 23-year-old male. Nikolai Thebu Brignoles. Thibaux-Brignoles. He was a 23-year-old male. Zolotaryov, Zolotaryov, who was 38, the oldest member of the group. And then Yuri Yudin, 21-year-old male.
So all 20s except the one who was 30.
Right, we had one. Yeah, the youngest was 20 years old, right. And then we had up to 24, and then we skipped to 38 right. years old.
Okay.
Who was Zolotaryov.
Yes. I thought you did a good job with those.
Thank you. They're a mouthful, and I want to make sure that we post those later just because I think that their names are you know, important for the journey that they took.
Yeah.
So, I'm kind of going to lay out a timeline for you guys, because that's what we know of the expedition.
Sure.
There was a diary that was kept along with photographs. Several of them had cameras.
Okay.
Along the journey, and so there's a lot of different pictures of them, you know, the snowshoes on, trekking, beginning their journey in different places they stopped.
Very similar.
Yes, that's all black and white. They all have beards and snow on them and a snowball fight.
I didn't mean like they look similar, all the pictures.
Yes.
Like, it's just them like walking through the snow.
Yes, yes, exactly. So, we're in the year of 1959, and our story starts on January 25th, where the group takes a train to Ivdel, I-V-D-E-L, which is a town in the center of the northern province, Sverdlovsk Oblast. They then took a truck to Vizhai, Vizhai, which was the furthest inhabited village to the north in this region.
Okay.
And that's where they planned to start their journey.
Okay.
So once they arrived in Vizhai, they purchased and ate bread to keep up their energy and made sure that they were all ready for the journey ahead. They agreed that they were going to telegram back to certain people upon reaching their destination, and they estimated that they would be at their final point and be able to send these telegrams on February 12th.
So,
although Dyatlov said that he believed it would take a little bit longer just because of the expected weather and that none of them had done a Category 3 before.
Yeah. So, like 3 weeks.
Yes. Ish. Yes. So they're planning on starting on February 1st.
Oh, okay.
And then, yeah, so they kind of got into town and kind of got themselves set up. But they're planning on starting on February 1st and then ending at least on the 12th, but probably a little bit later. On January 27th, that they began their trek towards Otteritten from the village. Yuri Yudin, who suffered from health problems, he was a 21-year-old male. He had some problems with his knees, and he had already had that, and he was like, you know what, guys, I'm going to slow you down, I'm just going to go back. So, actually, they began on January 27th, and Yuri kind of tapped out, like, almost immediately. He's like, yeah. I went a couple miles, and this is already bad.
Okay.
So, he went ahead and turned back. On January 31st, they arrived at the edge of a highland area and stashed extra food there for their return trip. They arrived at the edge of this area, and they were like, we're going to put extra food here, so on our way back down, like, we have provisions that we haven't already eaten.
They left food there.
They left food at the edge of the highland area, and then on February 1st, they started to move through the mountain pass.
Okay, so, like, the difficult part of the trip.
Correct. Yep. Is believed that they planned to get over the pass and make camp for the next night on the opposite side. The weather was starting to get really bad at this time, and snowstorms were decreasing the visibility for the group.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that they lost their direction and deviated to the west and moved up towards the top of Kholat Syakyal, Kholat space Syakhl, which was kind of another mountainy bank area. When they realized their mistake, the group decided, okay, like, we're already off course. We need to just stop and make camp here. Once we have light, we'll figure out where we're going tomorrow.
Right.
So, they actually made camp on the slope of the mountainside, even though they could have moved almost a mile, 0.93 miles down the hill to a forested area that could have offered some shelter from the bad weather.
Yeah, but did they see it?
Well, Yuri Yudin, the guy who turned back, thinks that Dyatlov probably didn't want to lose the altitude they'd already gained because they'd have to go back down the hill. Or he was saying this was great experience. They could practice camping on the mountainside.
Because that was kind of the. No. I'd be like, nope, let's go to the trees. Thanks.
That was just kind of how Dyatlov was. He was into, like,
if we're gonna making do it, we're it a challenge. It.
Go big or go home kind of guy. The next date we have is February 12th.
Okay.
So we go from February 1st to February 12th. That's the expected return date. And no news or communication comes from the group, but that's expected because Dyatlov anticipated that they wouldn't be there right away. By February 20th, 8 days later, relatives start to get worried and the first rescue groups are formed, mostly of students and volunteers from the area.
Mm-hmm.
So they're fellow classmates, basically. On February 26th, the tent and belongings are found from the group. Now, this is a strange scene.
That's going to be tough. they're going to go on a grade 3 hike, and then they get missing, but then all their friends who aren't necessarily hikers are going to get out there. Wow.
Yeah, dedication. So this was a really tricky situation.
Yeah.
I don't know that the weather was as bad yeah. at the time they went, and I think that's probably why it took a little longer for them to get to the site.
Oh, yeah.
The first people who got on the scene found the tent half torn down and covered in snow. The belongings of many of the campers were inside, along with some of their shoes. There was a hole in the tent that suggested it was cut from the inside. There were footprints leading away from the tent towards the woods, which the woods, remember, were like 0.93 miles or 1.5 kilometers away down the hill. But there were footprints leading from the tent down the hill. Some of these footprints were barefoot, some in shoes, and some in socks. They were walking at a normal pace, according to the stride. No one was running when these prints were made.
Even in bare feet?
Even in bare feet. But the prints were covered up by snow after about 500 meters.
Okay.
Or 1,600 feet. So, as the volunteers and students for the rescue group moved further down under a large Siberian pine tree at the forest edge, they found the remains of a fire and two bodies. Mm. So these are the first two bodies found, and they were of Krivonishenko and Doroshenko. They were shoeless and only in their underwear. Even though this is the Siberian wilderness and the temperatures were way below zero.
Yeah.
So, freezing conditions. There were tree branches broken up to 5 meters high on the Siberian pine tree, and it looked as if someone had tried to climb up the tree.
And, like, fell down?
We don't know.
Hmm.
Dyatlov, Kolmogorova, and Slobodin's bodies were then found between the forest and the campsite. So if they turned around and were moving back towards the campsite, they found three more bodies. It looked as if these three were trying to return to camp according to the poses of their bodies, and they were found at 300 meters, 480 meters, and 630 meters from the tree. So a little further and further back towards the camp. So this is, you know, that's two bodies by the tree and three more after that.
Yeah.
The remaining hikers were not found until 2 months later on May the 4th. So it took that long for them to discover the other bodies, which were under 4 meters of snow in a ravine 75 meters further into the woods from the tree.
Hmm.
They were three-fourths better dressed and looks like they had taken clothes from some of the people who may have passed away first.
Yeah.
Dubinina was wearing Krivonishenko's burned/torn pants with her foot and shin wrapped in someone else's jacket.
Hmm.
There were four remaining bodies found in the ravine. Mm-hmm. I think four.
Yeah.
The other bodies found in the ravine had several injuries that were unexplained at first. Zolotaryov and Dubinina both had chest trauma, which they believe may have been related to the fall, and then a small avalanche that covered them in the 4 meters of snow. Thebu Bringnolis, which is one name, had a skull injury that could have been related to the fall off the ravine and the avalanche. And then the stream that was running through this area where they were found possibly did water damage to them, which rotted them post-mortem.
Yeah.
Which could possibly explain the way some of these bodies were found. Dubinina was missing her tongue, eyes, part of her lips, as well as some facial tissue, and a fragment of her skull bone. Zolotaryov had his eyeballs missing, and Kolovatov was missing his eyebrows.
Eyebrows?
Yeah, his eyebrows were gone. Now, so these four were found at the bottom of a ravine covered in 4 feet of snow, and then a stream was running through. So they think that they decomposed more than the others.
Okay.
The death investigation revealed these injuries along with the Dyatlov, Doroshenko, Krivonishenko, and several of the others not mentioned from the ravine fall had died due to hypothermia.
Okay.
Dubinina had died. Her cause of death was internal bleeding from her severe chest trauma, as well as Zolotaryov.
Okay.
Um,
is that, would you die slowly from that? on quickly.
From which one? The chest trauma?
Yes.
It depends on how severe the trauma is. I mean, it would be fairly quick if it's a large trauma.
Yeah.
But if it's a small bleed.
I'm just trying to think of why they had the other people's clothes on. Because I was thinking maybe the other people died first and then they took their clothes.
Yes. You know what I mean? That's what they believe that the Dubinina, who was found with someone else's jacket and a jacket wrapped around her skin.
Yeah.
She was believed to have taken those from somebody who had died first.
Yeah.
Well, the investigation concluded saying that they died because of a compelling and natural force. What does that mean?
Soviets.
So, at this point, I know that this is a lot of crazy names and a lot of different, like, just timeline things. But basically what happened is this group of hikers who were pretty experienced hikers, not to this extent, but, like, pretty experienced hikers, go on this trek, are in their tent, which has a, like, an internal stove that heats the tent,
mm-hmm.
That one of them had kind of constructed. So they're in this tent, they're totally fine, and then they got up, cut a hole from the inside of their tent, and
walked out,
walked single file down a hill, and then slowly died and from hypothermia. Or
yeah, but the trauma, what happened to them? Did they fall?
They fell off the ravine.
Yeah, they probably, maybe.
Well, is it night? We're not entirely sure, but they think it was at night and that they didn't see it.
They just like,
So
how
there's
they walking there?
Exactly. Why would they leave the tent without shoes or barely clothed?
Yeah,
it's very strange.
Tent on fire?
Was the tent on fire? Yeah.
So that's one of the theories. So
they tried to cut themselves out.
Left without clothes.
So that's,
I guess,
the theory that I probably agree with the most. Actually, is that maybe not that the tent was on fire, but that the tent filled with smoke and they thought it was on fire. And because they couldn't see to get out of the tent, someone cut a hole in it. And they thought, okay, the tent's on fire, we need to leave. And they just immediately went down the hill, started a new fire, and thought they couldn't go back to the other one because
it had. But then
it was probably
maybe those
inflamed.
Three were like, no, we'll go back, went up.
And see what's left.
Basically died. And then the other people were like, well, like, we're not gonna make it.
I'm assuming that would, how long was it, like 500 meters from the thing, from the forest to the,
it was 0.93 miles, so almost a mile.
Oh, but I mean, still, like, that's, I don't think that's like the thing you die from. Just
why,
like,
would
walking.
You walk that far away?
Well,
too? I guess to go to the forest to get,
like,
tree branches.
Negative 30 degrees, though. Like, this is winter in Siberia with people who have no shoes on. So
I don't know if you caught on fire, though, wouldn't you just stay there if it was cold and you had to get out? Hear me out. If it was cold and you had to get out and there were people that had no clothes on and it was on fire, wouldn't you just stay there since it was already warm and on fire and have the people who were, had clothes on go down and start a new fire or whatever?
Why would you walk away? The people walking back, did they have clothes?
No, they didn't have clothes on, right?
Not fully, no. No one was fully clothed.
Except the people.
Well, they've taken pieces from others.
Right.
So, there's a lot of other theories that I'd like to read you different ones, because I think they're very interesting.
Was there just an avalanche? Is that one?
That's one of the, one of the theories is that there was either an avalanche, or they thought there was an avalanche.
What?
So, like, they heard a noise and thought, there's an avalanche.
Get out.
Yeah.
And the support for this is that they cut the hole in the tent, either because they were trying to get out quickly, or because there was an avalanche and their entrance was blocked.
Right, so instead of, they, like, it flipped or whatever, they had to, like, cut it.
Right, so they had to cut themselves out. The things against this theory is that they weren't running, so they weren't running away from an avalanche, and they were too experienced to have put themselves in a spot where there would have been an avalanche.
I guess
and
they
wasn't,
couldn't see, though, and they didn't know.
Scientists also say that it wasn't the right weather conditions or area for an avalanche to have fallen in this spot.
But that also doesn't quite make sense either, because unless they survived the avalanche and then got up and walked down the hill, You know what I mean? If they were trying to run away from the avalanche, their footprints would have probably gotten covered up by more snow.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons they didn't just stand by the tent, like you mentioned before, if it was on fire. Yeah. It was snowing really heavily, and I think that they were like, okay, we need to act right now.
Right,
we need
go get branches, ourselves set whatever, up. Yeah.
Right. So other theories include that they could have been attacked by a local tribe, but this the crime as a cause for all this has been discounted completely by every investigator who's looked at it. All the tribes in the area are very peaceful people, and there are no footprints other than the ones leading away from the
tent. Yeah, but there's also no... They all died from hypothermia, except the two with chest trauma. There's no...
Right.
Unless they, like, they just stood there and forced them to stand outside. Right.
Exactly. Some people were saying, oh, they must have been attacked by a local tribe, but there's nothing that supports that. So, some other theories are that there was a Yeti in the area.
I knew it.
The search party members who were there first said there were footprints at the scene larger than a human. An investigation started on February 6th, even though the hikers weren't reported missing until February 20th, according to some government documents.
Wait, what? Some government documents said there was a search party before the search party?
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know if that's true or
not. Well, so was there government involvement?
Several of the theories point to that. Although, back to the Yeti, people say that the injuries, if weren't caused by the ravine fall, it was superhuman power that caused their injuries.
The Yeti, like, punched them in the chest?
Yeah, or crushed them. So the other theories that point to military involvement are that there were known military tests being done in that area. Hmm. One of the things were called parachute mines that they drop out of aircraft.
Okay.
And they detonate before they hit the ground. And they cause injuries similar to those sustained that are internal from, like, the
pulse waves. Oh, it's just like a blast?
Yeah,
I was like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So, these...
But only two of them have that.
Right. So they're saying that the other ones could have been they could have been shell-shocked and wandered out of the tent from the first one from the impact.
Oh, okay.
And then they were just, like, not able to regain their bearings because there were multiple of these things
falling.
That would
be the worst one, I think, to have happen. I hope that didn't happen.
There was...
It's all terrible, but I think that one... just are confused. I don't know.
The Soviet Union was testing these in the area around this time, and... There is a photo that depicts it. It could have been that they just, like, took the photo accidentally, like how sometimes you, like, take a picture of your feet. But there's a picture where it looks like some strange lights are happening, and people reported seeing some strange orange lights in the area that they're like, oh, UFOs. But these parachute mines also have a similar, like, glow
right,
to them.
So maybe, and then if there was a government investigation that was covered up, maybe they, like, went out and were like, oh, shoot.
Soviets like their cover.
Maybe they were like, oh, crap, we hit something, and then they got there and were like...
Cover this up. Yeah, so that one, to me, could make sense.
Yeah.
And who knows if it...
That sad, though, I think.
It is. I agree.
Don't let false information spread. That's a Chernobyl quote.
Could it have been aliens?
Right. There were a lot... They said there was a lot of increased sightings of UFOs in the area at this time.
Right.
But people were saying that it was orange blinking lights that they were calling UFOs. There were also, like, confirmed parachute mines being dropped
right, so
in the area.
Right, people think it was the parachute
mines. So, some people are saying, no, it was definitely UFOs. Some people are saying the UFOs are parachute mines. Another interesting thing about some of the clothing was that there was some radioactive pieces of clothing found. However, investigations to this have shown that it was only a couple pieces of clothing, and it wasn't on everyone. One resource that I read said that it was actually only two people, and those two people, for their normal work or research, worked with radioactive stuff.
Oh, so that doesn't really point to anything necessarily?
Right. But a lot of the files that were, like, investigated into the radioactivity kind of just, poof. Can't really find a lot on it. It kind of just vanished.
Uh-oh.
There's two other kind of more natural theories, like natural event theories, that I found really interesting.
Since it was, quote-unquote, a compelling natural force.
Compelling natural force, right. So the first is called a catabolic wind. which is a really violent wind. One that was similar to this swept through Sweden in 1978, an accident on Aneris, where 8 hikers were killed in a similar topographical area. They tried to move for cover in the trees, and one member was actually blown away, and the rest of the party attempted a rescue of that person, and they, like, died in the attempt of the rescue. But it was a very violent wind.
It's just
wind,
so it strong just, like, that it picks... Well, yeah. So then I wonder if... Didn't it say that footprints were missing?
Yeah.
Oh my God, what if they were, stopped. Like, trying to walk towards the forest, and then they got picked up and, like, blown down there?
I don't know. See, that... So
and
that's, like...
to the ravine.
I think all of these theories have something about them that I'm like, oh, maybe.
Yeah.
And then the last theory that I want to talk about is called infrasound, which I think is very interesting. Oof. So infrasound is a wind that goes around a mountain and is creates a Karman vortex street, which is a lot of weird words that basically means that this wind blows in such a way that it produces a frequency of less than 20 hertz that can't be heard by humans, but your brain can still detect it. It induces discomfort, mental distress, and even panic attacks.
Oh, so you think they just had panic attacks and were like, we got to get out of here.
Right. So the theory goes that this wind blew around the mountain. It created this sound low enough that caused them to freak out and leave the tent and start walking away.
And then they were like, wait, what are we doing?
Right. And it was too dark to find their way back to the tent by the time that this happened. And once they had figured it out, they were down in the trees, which would have been out of the range of this
right,
vortex.
And so they tried to make a fire because they were just going to stay down there.
Right.
Maybe some people went to go look for more wood and fell in the ravine.
That's one theory. Or they were still experiencing effects and tried to keep going further. I don't know. Now, with this theory, I'm not entirely sure because to me, I would think they would have moved a little quicker and wouldn't be walking.
True.
However, I think that with someone like Dyatlov in charge of the group, that he probably kept them very like, okay, this is what we're going to do. Let's go.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know, though, because if it induces, like, panic attacks seem more...
I would say that it's probably not the same level of discomfort and panic in every person.
Yeah.
But it is supposed to produce mental distress in, like, anybody who hears this, like, frequency of sound.
That's scary, too.
Yeah. This is the most interesting to me because it's, like, a natural phenomena that
we
can't prove if it did or didn't happen.
Right.
Who knows? Now, another thing that was kind of weird, it's not really a theory that could have caused it, but it was something that definitely probably happened during this experience, was called paradoxical dressing, where once you start getting hypothermia, your brain thinks you're, like, burning
hot.
Up, so you just start taking your clothes off.
Right.
So it could have been that the first people that started getting hypothermia took their clothes off, and then the other people were like, what are you doing? And they just, like, put them on, because they weren't yet feeling hypothermia, but they
saw
their
friends
were already, like, dying from this.
Yeah, but they would have had to be out of the tent by then.
Yes, this is an after they already
left
the tent.
So it wasn't like some of them left the tent naked. It was just that they left the tent and then took their clothes off.
Scritchity scratch, scritchy scratch. If you listen closely, you can hear Ellie using the toity. Again, 2 episodes in a row.
Do you hear?
Yes.
So the Kolat Sikal, which is the area that they moved up towards when they got off course, is called by the Mansi, M-A-N-S-I, which is a local tribe. They call it the Mountain of the Dead because there's a legend that says that 9 Mansi hunters died mysteriously in the same area. And others say they just disappeared altogether. Now, interesting, isn't it? Because there were 9 hikers that also died mysteriously in the same area. Mount Otterton, which is where they were trying to go to, is called Don't Go There by these tribes. These mountains, especially the gates between them, are considered sacred and dangerous since the ancient times.
Okay, who would want to hike here then? It's literally called Don't Go Here.
And the Mountain of the Dead. So, who do we blame? Do we blame Yuri Udin? because then there would have been 10 of them, and then maybe no. they wouldn't have been cursed no. like this.
Did he get survivor's guilt?
I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I think he felt bad about it. He passed away on the 27th of April, 2013, at the age of 75.
Wow.
So he lived a long life, and I can imagine felt very guilty because...
Well, I bet it's awful, too, because I feel like it'd be awful to survive. It's not awful to survive, but, like, it's he doesn't know what happened to them.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he probably thinks... I would think if I were him, like, if I were there, I would have at least known what happened. But then he probably would have just died as well. You know what I mean? Like, he probably would have just been another victim.
Now, one of the reasons that I think that... I don't know if this is why David suggested it, but I have a feeling that he probably... I should ask him before I say this. But in February of 2019, the Russian authorities actually announced that they were reopening this investigation.
Really?
So they were planning to send teams of investigators and scientists back to Dyatlov Pass and try and recreate the scene and try and look at all the photos. There were...
I feel like it'd be almost... impossible, though, because you'd have to have the same weather conditions.
Hey.
You know what I mean?
You know how all these people died?
Let's go figure it out, yeah. Let's go see if we go crazy from this wind.
Now, what else is interesting is that they recovered all these pictures. Mm-hmm. In one of the resources I'll post, you can go and you can look through each of their cameras.
Yeah.
But what's weird is they started with, like, I want to say 6 cameras, and they only recovered 4. Like, there are cameras missing. But that's some of the only things missing.
That goes to another point, though, because if there was a cover-up and they took pictures of those parachute bombs. Mm-hmm. What are they? Parachute bombs?
Yeah, parachute mines.
Parachute mines. And they took those 2 cameras. I'm like, just conspiracy
to me,
theory.
Here's the picture that people say. Like, to me, they were trying to take a picture of a light.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they were trying to take
a
picture of the light.
Though,
right.
Because it's kind of has a trail behind it.
Yeah. And we'll post this picture. And you can look at, there's several, but that's one of the last pictures taken.
Oh, shit.
As well.
Hmm.
And there's lots of pictures of them, like, hiking together and happy. And it's kind of sad because they were really, you know, enjoying this trip.
Right.
And then something caused it to
graduate, get their black belt in hiking.
There's also a black belt in hiking, yes. I want a black belt in our quarter.
Sorry.
Did they actually give you a belt?
Yeah, it's like a ribbon.
To anyone. They tied around your recorder.
Oh, it's not like a belt for you.
No.
It's a belt for your recorder.
Yeah, my recorder is a backup.
She asked you that because the other day she asked if it would be harder to play a harmonica or a recorder. I said harmonica.
Yeah,
because... You have to blow, move, cover holes at the same time.
Yeah, there's way more like...
You have to do that for a recorder, too.
You don't have to move. Well, I guess.
Wow. You better cut that out. So another thing that I want to post besides just the pictures of them... there's actually a picture of the recovery of the scene where the volunteers and people came to with you can find pictures of some of the bodies decomposing online. I will not post those. However, if you are interested in that,
yeah, but
you'll
post that link that has all of them. So if you're interested, you can go.
Correct.
Oh.
I will also post the, there's a picture of the tent that had fallen down.
Yeah.
And there's also I think someone drew it in paint, which I'm kind of upset about because I think that after all these investigations, there should be a better diagram of the area and what happened, but I'm going to show it to you, and I want you to be as upset as I am about the quality of this map.
It's fine. I don't know what you're talking about. What's the red line?
Is that the ravine? Is that where they walked?
I think the ravine was like the cone-looking thing.
Why was the ravine shaped like that?
I think the red line...
I think it was supposed to be shaded. Like, the ravine was here, and then it went like down.
I'm not entirely sure. You know what I mean? I think the red line is where they traveled and stopped.
We don't know.
We don't know. Listen, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That was a very useless map.
Yeah.
So that's the end of what I have. I hope it wasn't too confusing.
No, not confusing.
There's a lot of different theories. Thank you, David, for sending in this suggestion. Do you think... Wait, first I want to know...
What do you think happened?
What do you think the most likely theory is, or theories. What theory do you think is BS, and will the story keep you up at night? That's a lot of questions.
Yes, so the story that I believe the most, yeah. I'm going to have to say either something like the cover-up, like there's obviously something else. I don't know if it was the parachute mines or, yeah, or something relative, but something where there's like, yeah, nothing. They just died. Like, yeah. And that's all you're going to want to know about.
Where are the other two cameras? Shh, shh, shh. What cameras?
There somehow a fire was created because they were on the side of a mountain, and then they just cut themselves out. Mm-hmm. But then I don't. The only part of that I don't understand why they, like, they're in the middle of a gigantic blanket of snow. Why would you run away from like the?
That's what I thought too. Why would you run away? But they didn't even run away. Yeah,
they just walked away. Like, oh well.
They're just like, well, bye.
Well, maybe like.
Maybe they watched it and got real sad, and then they walked away. Maybe they did what I did.
Everything just, like, burnt, and they're like, well, we're stuck here.
Yeah.
Hopefully, like...
That was one of the things about that theory that I found believable, was that if their tent filled with smoke, and they were like, okay, well, this is gone, and we can't go back in because it's on fire or smoke, their next best chance for cover was the tree line. So I think that's why they moved in that direction.
Was it, like, pine trees? Maybe they're trying to climb up the trees and break pine trees off so they could cover themselves.
Well, and that's something we didn't talk about, is why did somebody try and climb the tree?
5 meters is...
Well, because I thought maybe climb the tree if there was an avalanche. They were trying to climb the trees really fast so they, like, wouldn't get hit by the avalanche, right? I'm picturing a tall, sturdy tree. I don't know.
Yeah, it was a big pine tree.
Right, so that's what I thought. Second thought is, well, it had to be the Yeti that broke the tree.
Hey, who asked you? I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
I mean, they could have just been trying to look to see if they could see anything.
That was one of the things that people said, that maybe that they were
like,
just trying to get...
If they could see a native tribe?
Or they were trying to see where the tent was because they were down the hill.
They just couldn't see, so they're climbing up to get a vantage point. Mm-hmm. Could have been anything.
I want to know why whoever climbed the tree didn't have injuries.
That's true. Well, maybe it was maybe one of the people did, that fell the ravine, and we just didn't.
They made it 75 more meters before they
had to carry them. That's not too far.
Mm-hmm. How far is that?
75
Well, 100
meters.
It's
like, yeah.
It's like one side of the track.
Oh.
So that's not too far. Yeah, I guess that's not too far.
No.
Well, it could have been somebody who already that had the trauma, and they thought it was from the ravine, but it was actually from falling down the tree.
Yes,
no.
I actually do want to look in detail to your strange paint map.
Did you make this map?
No, I would have made one that was possible. Well, I don't know if it would have been better, but I don't know where I got that from, which resource. That's
okay,
the bad thing.
Den, I don't...
That's their tent, I'm assuming?
No.
Oh.
There was a den near to where they fell off the ravine, and I think that they said if they would have gone to it instead, they would have had some shelter. Anyway, so, Caitlin, did you answer which ones you think are...
Well, which one did you think was BS?
Don't say the Yeti.
Don't say gonna have to say the Yeti.
I guess, yeah. That or the wind. The wind.
The wind that pushed them, or the wind that made them go crazy?
I don't know.
Or both.
Because I feel like that's just the thing, like...
I thought you'd somebody be totally on board for that.
I mean,
it's creepy.
Like, I feel that probably is a thing.
Well, yeah, because it...
But I feel like it's definitely just, like... Wind. Like, what happened? It's just wind.
Wind, we don't know. There's no cover up here. The cameras you are trying to find are not here. What does he say? This is not the droid you're looking for.
Yeah, like, that's... Yeah. I feel like that is a reasonable answer. I feel that is not... For this instance was not, like...
True.
True. I feel like that could definitely be a thing. I just feel like that's definitely just...
Really?
Yeah.
The wind freaks me out a little bit.
Which one?
Both. I think the one that I believe the most... See, my conspiracy theory brain goes to the parachute mines. Right. Mm-hmm. But if there was no cover-up and they just couldn't find the cameras, then I don't know.
Why would they be able to recover basically everything else from the camp except for cameras?
That's true.
Are they burned?
Mm-hmm. No. When they find remnants of
there was no evidence of an actual
fire.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that.
So there's.
I don't think that the tent was actually.
Well, you can see it in pictures, right? The tent's like
yeah.
up.
Yeah, they. It was more of a. Did they think the tent was on fire?
Maybe there's a bunch of smoke.
Jingle jangle, the cats are ringle wrangling around.
Maybe they thought it was smoke. Couldn't breathe. Cut open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. Like, but they thought the tent was on fire.
I don't know.
I think they were trying to see how far they were away from the tent because they got turned around.
And
then
either fell or got one of tree branches or something.
Yeah.
Isn't, like, camera film, is it, like, super flammable? Do they use it to make the fire? Or do they use, like, sticks?
Maybe, but when they still have the cameras.
True. Or...
Yeah, right. Like the whole thing was gone. Not
sorry,
just
when they take it out. No, that's a good for the like, cameras to be gone.
Yeah,
but I don't...
unless someone just took them.
Oh, with the
like,
they took
like
them.
People
that's
who searched for them just took it and just didn't say anything.
Yeah,
it wasn't a cover up. They just took the. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know
because it could have been a friend or family member that's like, no, I'm going to keep this camera.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest. And there's like specific people's cameras that are missing. I'm not sure like whose, but like people had.
Was there anything in the
cameras.
Diary?
Oh, I know another thing that I didn't tell you. So, no, according to the diary...
It was just normal.
Things were going well.
Nobody wrote, oh my god, there's an avalanche coming.
I think the last, like, entry was the... When they put their food
oh,
there.
Yeah.
I don't think that they took the diary
well,
because
they set up camp there, right?
So...
That, they put set the food down, walked, put their camp down, and he probably didn't have time to write in his diary. Or her. I don't know.
So, one of the weird things that I didn't mention... One of the weird things I didn't mention that I don't know if I'll be able to find it now, but one of the pictures of the bodies, when it was found, it looked as if he was trying to take a picture of something. He, like, had the camera in such a way that it looked like he was, like, trying to take a picture. Which makes it
which
weirder
one?
To me. One of the guys who fell in the ravine.
Trying to take a picture of Yeti. He was trying to take a picture of the parachute mines. He was trying to take a picture of maybe he lived a little bit longer and someone came through to cover it up.
So this is the one that's like, he's like holding the camera like he's trying to.
Yeah.
Okay, so we will post pictures and we will post links to all of my resources that
yes.
I used for this story. Thank you again to David for suggesting it. Thank you to everyone else who sent in suggestions. We will get to your story soon. Thank you to Jack for being a guest on our podcast.
You didn't ask us.
I'm getting there. So, do you guys think that this story will keep you up at night? Or will you be able to sleep as snug as bugs in a rug? Or rugs?
I don't know. I don't know. It freaks me out that there could be a wind that makes me go crazy. That's scary.
You can't hear anything anyway.
That's the problem. You don't know. I don't know.
I don't know
what
frequencies you can hear.
I don't like unsolved stuff because I just want to know, like, what happened.
Well, that's what makes it a mystery, though.
I don't want it to be a mystery. I'm not good at Clue.
I was going to say, you love Scooby-Doo, but they always solve it at the end.
Solve it. Get out of here.
Jack.
I don't know. I think it'll be all right. I just don't know why they walked back.
Yeah.
The three people. And why did he... Why was it his pass?
True.
He was the leader of
the
expedition.
And did the guy who bailed out, did he ever talk about it?
So what I'm getting is you're not going to be okay. If you have all
just,
these questions.
I'll be honest.
This is the scene from The Jerk that I showed you, Caitlin, where it's like, fine, I'm leaving, but I'm taking this lamp, but nothing else. I'm okay without anything else but this lamp and this
chair.
Light bulb or something.
This chair.
I don't know. I guess I have questions.
So Jack will be okay, except for he wants to know why they walked backwards.
Yeah. I'm sure that guy
Yuri Yudin. Yeah, I mean, he has tried to help them piece together why they did some of the things they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and tried to help investigators with how...
what the thinking was.
Right, what Igor's thinking was during this. So they were all classmates, I mean.
Yeah.
Pretty friends. Pretty buddy buddies.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll post links to our website, buginarug.podbean.com. We'll post pictures to Instagram and Facebook. So Facebook, just search Bug in a Rug. Instagram and Twitter are BIAR Podcast. Reach out to us. Tell us what you think. What do you think happened to him?
Yeah, we want to hear your opinions.
What's your theory?
For sure. I'm very interested to see what you guys think happened.
Yeah.
Or if there's any new theories out there. I've tried to check, and I don't see any reports from the 2019 investigation out yet.
Yeah.
If you hear anything, let us know.
Yep.
If we hear anything, we'll post about it.
Yep. You can also reach out to us at our email at biarpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you want a sticker, yes. This is our new favorite part to talk about, or at least mine. If you want a sticker, go to iTunes or Facebook, Bug in a Rug. Leave us a review. Mm-hmm. Write us a review.
Screenshot that review and send it to us.
Yes.
Somehow. Absolutely. Anyway, DMs, email, does matter.
Yep.
And we'll send you a sticker.
You will get a sticker in the mail. A free sticker.
Yep. It's free. Well, you have to do a review, but it's free other than that.
Free falling.
What? Alrighty. Well, we That's hope mail. That... What?
Mail.
Mail.
And a mail. Do you remember
it's
that?
Mail time.
And a mail. Bow, bow, bow. And a mail. Hot digging dog. It's and a mail. Woof. That always was on, like, America's Funniest Home Videos.
No, okay.
Do you not remember?
Anyway, we hope that you will be able to sleep as snug as a bug in a rug after you have listened to Whitney's tale. Signing off, my name is Caitlin.
I'm Whitney.
I'm Jack.
Bye.
Sleep tight.